Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. French authorities said Tuesday none of the 150 people aboard the Airbus A320 jetliner that crashed in the country's remote snowy Alps survived the accident. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls said a helicopter landed near where the German wing's aircraft crashed in southeastern France, but rescue workers found no survivors. A local official in the ski resort region said the plane had disintegrated, with the largest debris the size of a small car. There was no immediate explanation for the accident. In Washington, the White House said there was no indication the crash was linked to terrorism. The French Aviation Authority said there was no distress call from the plane's pilots, but that the air traffic controllers declared an emergency because they lost contact with the cockpit. Afghanistan President Ashraf Ghani met with U.S. President Barack Obama at the White House today amid questions about the future U.S. military presence had in the war-torn country. President Ghani and Chief Executive Abdullah Abdullah, who head a power-sharing government, met top U.S. officials, including Secretary of State John Kerry, who praised the talks as productive. The discussions are aimed at improving bilateral relations that have been strained by nearly 14 years of war and America's often testy relations with former Afghan President Hamid Karzai. During the Monday talks, the leaders addressed Mr. Ghani's concerns regarding security ahead of the spring months that have traditionally seen more frequent than usual Taliban attacks. To shore up stability, the United States announced it would ask Congress for funding to allow the Afghan National Security Force to maintain 352,000 troop levels. This is VOA News. Yemen's Shiite rebels made advances in southern Yemen Tuesday, clashing with rival militias loyal to the country's current president. The rebels, known as Houthis, entered the town of Al-Dalia and fought fierce gun battles with militias who support Abdurrabu Mansur Hadi. To the north in Taiz province, the rebels and soldiers loyal to ousted President Ali Abdullah Saleh clashed with anti-Houthi protesters. The soldiers opened fire on the protesters, killing at least one, wounding several others, this according to medical officials. As the United States and a group of five other world powers held nuclear negotiations with Iran, U.S. ally Israel used espionage to glean details of the secret talks and work behind the scenes to scuttle any potential agreement, this according to a report posted late Monday by the Wall Street Journal. The journal said senior White House officials learned last year that Israel was using eavesdropping, information from confidential U.S. briefings, informants, and European diplomatic contacts to learn details of the talks. The report says Israel denied directly spying on the U.S. Despite the pledge of secrecy, Israeli officials have repeatedly made statements asserting that a potential deal would not go far enough to make sure Iran would be left unable to build nuclear weapons. Economic reports published Tuesday showed new home sales surging in the United States while consumer prices rose slightly in February. Some economists say the data may encourage the U.S. Central Bank to boost interest rates as soon as June. Late Labor Department data show consumer prices rose 0.2% in February after declining previously. U.S. oil prices had fallen sharply and the savings rippled through the entire economy, keeping prices in check. That left inflation below the 2% annual rate Federal Reserve experts say is healthy for the economy. As the Fed tries to guide the economy, it aims for full employment and stable prices. Fed Chair Janet Yellen recently told journalists,
"My colleagues and I continue to expect that as the effects of these transitory factors dissipate and as the labor market improves further, inflation will move gradually back toward our 2% objective over the medium term."
PNC Bank senior economist Gus Fauscher predicts the inflation will rise toward the 2% target over the next couple of months. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper says Canada will expand its military mission against the Islamic State group to include airstrikes on targets in Syria. Mr. Harper told Parliament Tuesday Canada will not seek the express consent of the Syrian government to launch the attacks. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. And coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
Nigerians go to the polls Saturday in hotly contested presidential and parliamentary elections following a six-week delay for security reasons. The country's police chief and Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, sought to reassure the country Tuesday, saying preparations are on track for a credible and peaceful vote.
That's VOA's Anne Luke reporting from Abuja. Details next.
Also in the news, the World Health Organization says politics did not play a role in its decision last year to declare Ebola an international health emergency.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Gabon, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Nigerians go to the polls Saturday in hotly contested presidential and parliamentary elections. The vote follows a six-week delay for security reasons. The country's police chief and Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, sought to reassure the country today, saying preparations are on track for a credible and peaceful vote. VOA's Anne Luke has the story from Abuja.
INEC Chairman Adehiru Jega says the commission is ready, and Saturday's poll will be the country's best organized yet.
Let me also reassure that INEC and all its field officials are determined to be impartial and nonpartisan in the conduct of these elections. We will continue to do everything humanly possible to ensure a level playing field for all parties and candidates.
Logistics have been an issue in previous elections, but INEC says it will start pre-positioning polling materials Wednesday. This is Nigeria's first nationwide vote using the new biometric voter registry. The hope is that this new technology will make ballot stuffing and multiple voting impossible. INEC says biometrics allowed it to remove more than 4 million duplicate registrations from the voter roll. Jega said 82% of voters have now picked up their permanent voter cards. Card readers at the polls will verify voters using the photo and fingerprint biodata embedded in chips in those PVCs. Some political parties have objected to the use of the card readers, worried that hacking, theft, or malfunction of the machines could keep people from voting. INEC has held several public demonstrations of the technology around the country. The commission says the only major issue has been difficulty reading some fingerprints. But Jacob said this will not prevent a person from voting.
If fingerprint scanning failed, and yet a person is physically authenticated in the presence of party agents and all observers, an incident report form will be completed, and the person will be accredited to vote. And this is consistent with an agreement that we had with the political parties.
Inspector General of Police Suleiman Abba said at least three security personnel will be at each of the approximately 120,000 polling units.
Enough arrangements have been made for security at these polling units. And arrangements have also been made enough for the materials. To assure you that we will do everything possible to protect the integrity of the results, so that at the end of the day, the results will be acceptable to all.
Abba called for, quote, restraint from politicians and voters during and after the vote. Accusations of vote rigging after the 2011 election triggered violence in the north that killed some 800 people. This election, like that one, pits President Goodluck Jonathan against ex-military ruler Muhammadu Buhari. Polls have shown the two main candidates neck and neck throughout much of campaigning. Anne Luck, VOA News, Abuja.
Thank you. And one of the biggest concerns for Nigerian voters as well as party officials is making sure there is no voter fraud. Nigeria's First Lady Patience Jonathan has called for voters to remain at polling centers to make sure their vote is secure. In addition, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has called for transparent voting. VOA's Peter Clodi is in Lagos. He has the latest on how Nigeria is responding to calls for a free and fair vote.
Well, this was the first time the First Lady Patience Jonathan has given a directive to supporters of the ruling People's Democratic Party, as well as all prospective Nigerian voters, that they should stay behind in the polling stations to protect their vote by ensuring that nobody steals their vote when they vote. First off, the Inspector General of Police had earlier issued a warning calling on voters after they vote to go back to their homes to give the security agencies enough room to ensure that there's no violence. However, the First Lady has said that people should stand there, not interfere with the work of the security agencies, but ensure that their votes are protected. Now, this has been a similar call by the late opposition All Progressive Congress, calling on supporters of their party to stand firm and to be witnesses to whatever goes on at the polling stations to ensure that no political party uses its power to undermine the credibility of the election by rigging the vote after they've cast their ballot. In an about turn, the Inspector General of Police has recanted his initial directive and has now called on voters to stay behind to protect their vote as well. So there seems to be a unanimity about all these political parties as well as the Inspector General of Police calling on voters to stay behind to protect their votes, Ken.
I understand also that ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, is also calling on authorities to make sure there is no voter fraud. So what are they doing?
Well, last night, Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama, who also heads the ECOWAS Authority Commission, met with President Goodluck Jonathan at the Nnamdi Azikiwe International Airport in Abuja and stressed on the need for the Electoral Commission to treat all participating political parties equally so that they will be on an equal playing field, so that none of the political parties will feel aggrieved that one of the parties is being showed favoritism. And he also called on President Goodluck Jonathan to ensure that the security agencies maintain law and order, and that the elections should not be marred by violence or anybody making any effort to undermine the stability of the country. So yesterday they met, and these were some of the utterances he made after he also issued a press statement calling on all participating political parties to urge their supporters not to engage in acts of violence that would threaten the country's stability as well as undermine the credibility of the election.
What are your sources telling you regarding people defecting from one party to the other here at the last minute, going from the PDP party to the APC and APC party to the PDP? What is that all about?
Those are some of the controversies going around. Now, in a very significant political moment, the deputy governor of Rivers State defected from the main opposition or Progressive Congress to the ruling party. The reason why it's significant is because Rotimi Amaechi, who is the governor of Rivers State, is the campaign manager of General Muhammadu Buhari, the presidential candidate of the APC. Now, so to have his lieutenant governor and about several commissioners announcing their defection from the APC to the ruling party is a big slap on the face of the campaign of the APC, as well as Rotimi Amaechi, who is the campaign manager and as well as the governor of Rivers State. However, last week, there were about 5,000 supporters of PDP who moved en masse to the APC. So people are cross-carpeting, depending on how they calculate what their chances are of being with the winners during the Saturday's election. So we'll see how that goes. But this has been like a political soccer game, one group moving from one party to the other, depending on the prevailing situation on the ground.
That was our VOA colleague, Peter Cloti, who was in Lagos, Nigeria, covering the upcoming elections.
Reuters reports today that residents of the northern Nigerian town of Damask says Boko Haram militants kidnapped more than 400 women and children this month. The town has been liberated from the militants by troops from Niger and Chad. Residents are quoted as saying militants kidnapped 500 people but killed about 50 of them before leaving town. Also published reports say two female suicide bombers died yesterday in Nigeria's Borno state after the explosives strapped to one of the girls blew up. Reports say it happened in the village of Auno along the Madiguri-Damatura road. Daily Trust Online reports one of the girls intentionally set off the explosives when members of a vigilante group began to question them from a distance. No other deaths or injuries were reported in the incident. Recent suicide bombings in northeast Nigeria have been blamed on Boko Haram militants. And Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan is quoted as saying drones are being used in the fight against Boko Haram. This Day Online reports the drones are being used in aerial surveillance.
Well, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, has begun a two-day visit to northern Cameroon. He'll assess the condition of thousands of Nigerian refugees who have fled from the militant group Boko Haram in northeastern Nigeria. The refugee chief also will meet with thousands of Cameroonians internally displaced due to cross-border attacks by the insurgents. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Cameroonian authorities estimate more than 74,000 Nigerian refugees have crossed into the far north region of the country. This includes some 25,000 who fled there in the month of February alone. They reportedly escaped clashes between the regional military forces and Boko Haram insurgents in northeastern Nigeria. The UN Refugee Agency reports the first stop on the High Commissioner's visit to Cameroon will be to Minawao refugee camp, located some 90 kilometers from the regional capital, Marau. The camp now houses nearly 33,000 Nigerian refugees who have been relocated from the dangerous border area with Nigeria. UNHCR spokeswoman Karen de Gruul says Refugee Chief Antonio Guterres will hear firsthand testimonies from the refugees about the events that propelled them to leave their homes. He also will assess conditions in the camp. She tells VOA the agency's operation to move the Nigerian refugees away from the border to safer camps further inland is ongoing because of the ever-present dangers.
It's difficult to agree or disagree with the refugees' assessment on the security in the border areas. We know that for humanitarian organizations, it's too dangerous. We can't go there, so we can't give them any protection or assistance activities. That makes them very vulnerable and open to abuse and attack. So that's one of the reasons. If they choose to stay in the border areas for whatever reason, that's their choice. Relocation is voluntarily.
Despite the dangers, de Gruul says many refugees prefer to stay close to the border. She says some are waiting for relatives who are fleeing to Cameroon. Others choose to remain to take care of their cattle or to return home as soon as the situation improves. Cameroonians who are homeless because of regular incursions by Boko Haram insurgents into the country now outnumber the Nigerian refugees. De Gruul says High Commissioner Guterres plans to meet with some of the estimated 96,000 internally displaced Cameroonians. She says he will offer UNHCR support to help cover their most urgent needs.
Most IDPs are living in host communities. That's why we want to have projects to strengthen the facilities of these host communities, including health and education. There are several IDP sites. There are still spontaneous sites. Again, it's very difficult to reach them. We have been coordinating their response, and we're trying to make sure that these people get the same type of assistance that the refugees are getting.
In addition to the Nigerians, Cameroon is hosting more than 244,000 refugees from the Central African Republic. De Gruyt says the UN refugee chief will be meeting with Cameroon's president to discuss the support needed to improve the living conditions of all refugees, as well as the internally displaced and the host communities helping them. Guterres will end his mission with a short visit to Chad. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhi, and 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top story. Nigerians go to the polls Saturday in hotly contested presidential and parliamentary elections following a six-week delay for security reasons. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The world's leading medical organizations are coming together to bring new treatments to more than 2,600 patients in 16 countries who are diagnosed with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis, or MDR-TB. One clinic in Nairobi's Matare slum is treating 48 patients suffering from MDR-TB. Mohammed Yusuf in Nairobi reports one of the patients suffers from the extreme drug-resistant form of the disease, XDR-TB. It requires a patient to undergo constant injection and oral medication for a minimum of 24 months.
Nairobi's Matare slum is overcrowded. It is home to more than 500,000 people. Health officials say this is a place vulnerable to an outbreak of tuberculosis. 30-year-old Elizabeth Wangeshi, a Matare resident, started feeling ill in early 2013. She started coughing, feeling chest pains and experiencing night sweats. She thought she was suffering from normal flu and believed it would go away in a matter of days or a week. After 2 months without much change, she went to a local clinic near her home for treatment. Wangeshi says after the checkup, she was diagnosed with tuberculosis. She says at the government clinic, she took medication for about 4 to 5 months, but the medication did not work and her situation worsened. The mother of two was not responding to the medication, and 4 months later she was diagnosed with extreme drug resistance TB. According to the Center for Disease Control, extensively drug resistant TB is a rare type of multi-drug resistant tuberculosis that is resistant to medicines normally used to treat tuberculosis and leprosy. Elizabeth Wangeshi says some of the medication prescribed to her for the condition were not available in the country. She says she had to wait for about a month to get the right medicines. She says she has now been under XDR medications for 10 months. In a statement, international organizations partners in health estimate 500,000 people develop MDR-TB every year. About 10% of that number are XDR-TB. Hussein Kero, an infectious disease specialist with the International Medical Aid Organization, Doctors Without Borders, says that after months of struggle, Elizabeth Wangeshi is able to respond to the new medication provided to her.
So we took us almost 3 months to get this drug. And this drug is called pedaculin. It's one of the new drugs that have developed in 50 years. So we got the drug, and she was put on the medication. We made a new cocktail for her, and she did very well on medication.
Kero says they suspect Wangeshi may have caught the disease from someone who did not know about his or her TB status.
This is an airborne disease. If you live in overcrowded places with very little light coming in, and people don't, you know, go for TB screening, if you are living with someone who is coughing, you are likely to get TB again. because an airborne disease. It can be transmitted from person to person if the person is infected.
Medical officials say currently the new drugs have to be combined in treatments that last up to 2 years with severe side effects, and only a 50% success rate for MDR-TB overall, and less than 20% for XDR-TB. Elizabeth Wangeshi got 14 months to complete her dose of medicines, and her 3-year-old son, who is also infected, got 5 months. She hopes when she's done with her medications, she will be able to go back to her teaching career or even get a better job to take care of her young family. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News.
The World Health Organization says politics did not play a role in its decision last year to declare Ebola an international health emergency. The Associated Press recently reported on international documents that discouraged declaring an emergency, citing diplomatic relations, mining interests, and the Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca. The documents were dated 2 months before the WHO announced the emergency. A document dated June 10th quoted Director General Dr. Margaret Chan as saying an emergency declaration could be viewed as a hostile act by Ebola-affected countries. The World Health Organization declared the emergency on August 8th, but by that time, 1,000 people have died of the disease.
A supporter of a controversial way to prevent overfishing has won a major environmental prize. VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
Jane Lubchenco supported programs known as catch shares when she headed the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration from 2009 to 2013. Catch shares set a maximum amount of fish that can be caught in a region, then divide the allowed catch among fishermen. Proponents say they stop a race to the bottom, in which fishermen try to catch as much as possible without regard for the future of the fishery. With catch shares, fishermen's takes increase as the fishery recovers and grows. Lubchenco credits these programs with restoring fish populations in the United States.
From 2000 to 2013, we went from having 92 overfished stocks to 40, and we went from having zero rebuilt stocks to 34. It gives us incredible hope that we can replicate those successes elsewhere and really end overfishing at the global scale.
Critics say these programs can drive small fishermen out of the market and raise barriers to people just getting started in the industry. 17 U.S. fisheries are in catch shares programs, and more are in development. Lubchenco will share the $200,000 Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement with Madhav Godgill of India's Goa University, who drew praise for engaging local communities in environmental protection. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
This is African News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Nigeria decides 2015, the final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. Nigeria decides 2015 on radio with Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, and Nightline Africa. On television with Africa 54 and Straight Talk Africa. On the web at voanews.com. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday, with results as the votes are counted, and on the web to show you where the counting stands and where the votes are coming from. Nigeria decides 2015. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Lino Armoudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 1730 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Nigerians go to the polls Saturday in hotly contested presidential and parliamentary elections following a six-week delay for security reasons. And the World Health Organization says politics did not play a role in its decision last year to declare Ebola an international health emergency. Coming up, we'll have music from Gabon. And in our feature segment, concerns that elements within the Nigerian military and security forces helping the ruling party stay in power. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. And happy Tuesday, Sunny. Well, Sunny, I understand South Africa's cricket team suffered a tough loss on Tuesday.
Happy Monday, Kim. Yes, South Africa's dreams of reaching a first Cricket World Cup final were dashed on Tuesday in heartbreaking fashion in Auckland, New Zealand. In a thrilling semifinal match at Eden Park, the Proteas of South Africa lost to the Black Caps of New Zealand by 4 wickets. The home team booked a place in Sunday's final with a dramatic penultimate ball victory, with the Black Caps needing 12 off the last over. 2 singles, then a 4 off the third ball from Daniel Vettori saw them well placed. After running a bye, all-rounder Grant Elliott smashed a 6 on the 5th ball to send New Zealand to the cup final for the first time.
I guess I changed my game a little bit at the death when you can free yourself up. I was looking to hit that ball for 6 or 4. I was just going to line it up, and wherever it was going over the boundary, hopefully. I didn't want to be there 70 not out, not winning this game. That was not a position I wanted to be in.
The position Grant Elliott and New Zealand are now in is a chance to play for the trophy on Sunday in Melbourne against either Australia or defending champion India. Elliott dedicated Tuesday's triumph over the South Africans to all of New Zealand's supporters.
For the fans and the 4 million people in New Zealand, I think, you know, the supporters, that wins for them. The support has been overwhelming, and I think there's been a lot of talk about us just making the semis and never quite kicking on. So I know it means a lot to the team, but, you know, you could see the emotions in the stands today. It means a lot to a lot of people in New Zealand. So hopefully we can repay the faith in the final as well.
During Tuesday's semifinal, a lengthy rain delay during South Africa's innings meant the application of Duckworth-Lewis calculations, whereby South Africa's score of 281 for 5 and 43 overs resulted in a required target of 298 for New Zealand in the same number of overs. South Africa's captain, A.B. de Villiers, says it was an excruciating loss.
We play this game to win games of cricket, to take glory away home and make a difference in a nation's heart and hope. So we didn't do that, we didn't achieve that, and it hurts quite a bit, you know. Gutted. We had our chances and we didn't take them.
This marked the 4th time South Africa reached the Cricket World Cup semifinals. As A.B. de Villiers just said, it hurts quite a bit for the team not to finally get to the final. In African athletics, Marco Umah caught up with three winners at a meet held over the weekend in South Africa's political capital of Pretoria. Here's Mark.
South African Commonwealth Games 200-meter finalist Akani Simbini won the 200 meters in a lifetime best of 20.27 seconds and 100 meters in 10.14 seconds on Saturday. Simbini is surprised by his rich vein of form.
I wasn't really expecting it because my goal for Asian Championships was to just make the qualifying standard for World Senior Championships. Getting the PBs was just a good sign of where I'm at in my training.
Well, after the Commonwealth Games, when it came to Africa Championships, you were injured in the semifinals, and so coming back straight away, it looks like the injuries you had were now a thing of the past. Have you fully recovered?
Yes, I've gotten over my injuries now. After the hamstring injury, I got a back injury, and then I got over that, so everything is back to normal now.
Having attained your initial goal of qualifying for the World Championships, for this particular year, what goals have you set in terms of time for both of your 1 and 200 meter?
For the 100 meters, it's to break the sub 10 barrier, and then the 200 meter, it's just to improve on the personal best that I have currently each time. That's just my goals for this year.
That was Akani Simbini, South Africa's Commonwealth Games 200 meter finalist, speaking in Tshwane. Meanwhile, 17-year-old newfound Gift Lutella set a South Africa youth 200 meter record of 20.63 seconds. He later won the boys' youth 100 meters in a lifetime best of 10.47 seconds and is delighted.
The best day of my life. Just want to thank the Lord for his hard work and your everything.
You're a student, are you?
Yes, I'm still at Tuck Sport High School.
Well, didn't you feel tired coming into the finals and yet you still had to run your best?
I was feeling confident because of the time I ran in the semifinals.
So going forward, what do you think is your goal?
This year, I just want to go to the World Youth Championships in Colombia and bring back a medal to SA.
That was Gift Lutella, South Africa 200-meter youth record holder, speaking in Tshwane. Finally, Africa Women's 400-meter hurdles champion Wenda Nell made a victorious start to her season in 55.20 seconds.
It was fun. I didn't put too much pressure on myself. Everything worked out. My stride patterns were perfect. Hopefully, as we go along, hopefully the time will drop.
55.21 is actually a much faster time than you started with last year. Could this be an indication that perhaps you may even go faster than you've done?
I really do hope so. 55.2 is not far from my personal best. My personal best time is 54.82.
And that means that even the South African record is under threat.
Definitely. That is my aim. Whether it's going to happen this year or next year, still a gamble for me, but I really want to achieve that.
That was Wenda Nell, the Africa Women's 400-meter hurdles champion. Champions.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.
The voice of America.
Hello, everybody. From that very first broadcast during World War II, and ever since, the voice of America has been the voice of freedom. So on behalf of the American people and the millions around the world who draw hope and strength from your work, thank you all for being the proud and steady voice of America.
Voice of America, VOA.
I encourage our VOA listeners with internet access to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
I posted a photo on my Facebook page of the Flying Eagles after Nigeria's national under-20 football team won its record-extending 7th African title over the weekend in Dakar, Senegal. Among those checking in with congratulations in the Facebook comments section were Nwoke Chooks in Abuja, Nigeria, Umar Faruku in Kaduna, South Nigeria, and Joseph Achebe in Enugu, Nigeria. The Flying Eagles also received some long-distance international congratulations from Eric Bueneman, who wrote from the USA. Eric refers to a couple of Major League Soccer clubs, saying, "Congrats from the town between the Chicago Fire and Sporting KC." In case you're wondering what town Eric is talking about, I believe it's Hazelwood, Missouri. Austin Njoku, writing from Nigeria's political capital of Abuja, says, "The young lads are good. We expect them to do well in New Zealand. Congratulations to the Flying Eagles of Nigeria." Austin is referring to the 2015 FIFA Under-20 World Cup, which kicks off in New Zealand at the end of May. Nigeria, runner-up Senegal, and the two other semifinalists, Ghana and Mali, all will represent Africa at New Zealand 2015.
They're playing back.
In U.S. men's college basketball, we've reached the Sweet 16 stage of the National Championship Tournament, one of the most popular annual sporting events here in the United States. There will be four games on Thursday night and four more on Friday night. The single elimination competition will culminate April 6th when a new national champion is crowned in Indianapolis, Indiana. Let's take a look at this week's matchups. Top seed and unbeaten Kentucky, the big favorite to win the trophy, will play West Virginia, and Notre Dame will go against Wichita State. Both of those games will be played Thursday in Cleveland, Ohio. Also Thursday, Wisconsin will play North Carolina, and Arizona is matched against Xavier. Those games will be played in Los Angeles, California. On Friday night in Syracuse, New York, Oklahoma will meet Michigan State, and Louisville will play North Carolina State. Also Friday night in Houston, Texas, top-seeded Duke will play Utah, and Gonzaga will go against the University of California at Los Angeles, Shaka Solly's alma mater, and it's better known as UCLA. The winners of the eight games will advance to play Saturday and Sunday, and by the end of the weekend, we'll be down to the Final Four. A sellout crowd of about 70,000 is expected to attend the Final Four at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. There will be two semifinal games on April 4th, and the national championship game, as I mentioned, will be April 6th. In terms of teams that are in the Sweet 16, Shaka Solly's beloved UCLA has the proudest championship pedigree, with a record 11 national titles. Kentucky is next with 8 championships. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahaeus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, concerns that elements within the Nigerian military and security forces are helping the ruling party stay in power. And next, Ethiopia, from its fast-growing economy to its emergence as a regional peacemaker. But first, some music. Here is Oliver Ngoma of Gabon with Shadow. Oh,
Sanze mona bushado nzungu basibatwe baba utsola baba roka
Gabon zoli barangoma with shadow.
Well, as we've been reporting, Nigeria is preparing to hold its fifth democratic election on March 28th after ending decades of military rule in 1999. The polls come as the military tries to secure parts of the northeast from attacks by the Islamic radical group Boko Haram. It says its sole role is to restore law and order and to protect the territorial integrity of Nigeria. But some observers are concerned that elements within the military and security forces have another goal, helping the ruling party, the People's Democratic Party, to stay in power. From Washington, William Eagle has more.
The release of a secretly recorded audio in February caused quite a stir. The 37-minute recording features a discussion on how to manipulate last June's elections for governor in Ekiti State. It included talks between the winning candidate from the People's Democratic Party, or PDP, and federal government and military officials on ways to suppress votes for the then-sitting governor from the All Progressives Congress, APC. The challenger from President Goodluck Jonathan's ruling party won the state elections. APC officials complained that its voters were intimidated by security forces. They allegedly restricted the movement of campaign organizers and officials, including a group of APC governors who went to Ekiti to help the party with a show of support. Garba Shehu is the director of media and communication for the presidential campaign of the All Progressives Congress.
The enormity of that tape is such that it revealed clearly that APC, our party, did not lose Ekiti. Rather, the high command, I'm talking about the highest level of government in Nigeria, clearly gave directives to the supervising security element, the army, in this particular case, who are instructed of what to do in order to subvert the will of the people of Ekiti. The minister did not miss words in that case, saying that he was acting on the orders of the president.
The presidency denies any involvement in the case, and the federal government and military have so far refused to investigate. PDP spokesmen in Ekiti say the tape was manipulated to show the party in a bad light. Major General Chris Olukulade is a spokesman for the Nigerian Armed Forces. He says whatever happened in Ekiti is not the norm for military and security services.
Well, I must tell you that apart from the drama of wanting to over-dramatize whatever happened in that instance, that is not the ideal. It is not the expectation or any official arrangement by the military. Those who are trying to cause alarm with a view to prevent the involvement of security agencies in ensuring law and order during this election are the ones who must explain what their problems are. There is no need for the alarm that is being raised in certain quarters.
Olukulade says the military's main goal is to prevent what he called thuggery during the polls, which he says does mean restrictions on movement in places with the potential for violence. However, he says that should not prevent people from traveling to cast their ballots. He says the military will not be present in polling booths, but will act at the request of the Electoral Commission for assistance. For example, the Navy or Air Force could help transport ballot boxes to polling sites that are difficult to reach. And he says INEC and the military have worked together to create a code of conduct for the armed forces. Opposition members and some observers are wary of the involvement of military and security forces in the polls. Darren Q is an associate professor of conflict resolution at the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and the director there of the Center for Peace, Democracy, and Democratic Development. He's also monitored all of Nigeria's previous democratic elections since 1999. He says the ruling party may have given the military an opening into politics when it asked the armed forces whether it could guarantee national security on the original date of the polls during the second week of February.
Prior to the elections, the Election Commission itself had said that it was ready for the elections. The Council of State indicated that they thought Nigeria was ready. And then at the last minute, we see the Johnson administration bringing pressure on the military to tell the Electoral Commission that they were not able to provide sufficient security for the elections to hold on February 14th. And what concerns me about this is it opens the door for the military to begin to play some kind of an arbitration role in the political conflicts among the parties. And this is exactly the pattern that led to the downfall of democracy in Nigeria and elsewhere on the continent over the past 4 or 5 decades. So I don't think we're close to a coup yet, but this is the beginning of the politicization of the military in the current crisis over the elections that concerns me. And once you bring the military into politics like this, they tend to have their own ideas about how the crisis should be managed.
Major General Chris Olukolade says Nigeria's armed forces have no interest in politics.
The Nigerian military is professional, is apolitical, and is very conscious of its roles as mandated by the Constitution. The military did not postpone the election, but we have a duty to analyze the security situation and the decision to do anything related to election to election. It's not that of the military. It's that of the electoral bodies or stakeholders. How then do you want the military to take responsibility for that decision?
Major General Olukolade says the decision to postpone the polls was made by civilian politicians. The military's role is only to help maintain law and order. Anyone saying otherwise, he says, is simply trying to cause trouble. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
Ethiopia was once known for its famine and droughts, but now headlines about the country are mostly positive, from its fast-growing economy to its emergence as a regional peacemaker. Martha VanderWolf reports on how Ethiopia is changing the narrative.
Ethiopia is transforming rapidly. In the capital city, it's all about the construction of buildings and large infrastructural projects. And international headlines have also highlighted these changes. Not long ago, media reports about Ethiopia focused on war, poverty, famine, and drought. Now, the headlines focus more often on the East African nation's fast-growing economy. Foreign Affairs spokesman Dina Mufti says the Ethiopian government actively contributed to changing its negative reputation.
It's a phenomenon that we have had once in the past. It is something that we have put behind us effectively, and everybody works to make sure that agony won't recur, won't come back again.
And it's not only the double-digit GDP numbers of the past decade that attract positive headlines. Ethiopia's role as peace negotiator for regional conflicts such as South Sudan is boosting the country's diplomatic reputation as well. And the reputation of being a relatively stable country with an emerging economy and a growing middle class is reaping fruits, bringing back home Ethiopians from the diaspora. Henok Asifa is one of them, running a consultancy firm. He says that foreign firms still need a bit of convincing to believe Ethiopia is also a place for business.
Investors that have never been to Ethiopia, it takes a while to convince them because their mindset in many ways is that this is a poor country where you go there to help people live a better life. They don't really see it as an opportunity so much.
But not everyone's lives are improving. The United Nations Development Program estimates that a third of Ethiopians still lives in poverty. And right groups frequently criticize the country's human rights record. Opposition parties, such as the Blue Party, accuse the government of violating basic democratic principles. Blue Party spokesman Jonathan Tesfai says Ethiopia's new and improved image is an illusion fabricated by the authorities.
The information comes from the statistic agency, and those guys are not to be trusted. And that's not only it, but the growth that we are having, the development or the bloom, whatever it is, it's only concentrated in Addis Ababa. If you go to the rural areas, they're lagging behind. And that's going to be very problematic in the future.
Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Years of political unrest have roiled Egypt's economy and caused instability that resulted in foreign investors pulling out, which worsened the problem, and over time, the situation snowballed. Today, in order to rise out of the morass, the country's economy needs an influx of some $200 to $300 billion in foreign investment. So, in an effort to make Egypt more attractive to investors, President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi launched significant reforms to kickstart the economy and improve the business climate. These include cutting income tax rates, establishing new mechanisms to resolve commercial disputes, and passing a new law providing new incentives and legal protections for investment. All of these things are key to attracting new investment, said Secretary of State John Kerry at the Egypt Economic Development Conference, which took place in mid-March in the Egyptian Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. Everybody knows that money, capital, behaves in fairly predictable ways, and those who make decisions about investment look for certainty. They look for confidence. They look for the knowledge that, if they invest, what they're investing in will be a transparent and accountable transaction. The United States believes that as the region's most populous country, Egypt has a crucial impact on the entire region. So a stable, prosperous Egypt means a stable, prosperous region. That is why the U.S. invests in Egypt, about $2.2 billion worth, or 20% of all direct foreign investment. We are providing economic assistance in the hundreds of millions of dollars that will be directed to small business enterprises and to new startups because we want to see a sustainable economy grow in Egypt, said Secretary of State Kerry. It is strategically important to this region and to all of us who are looking for stability and for a better standard of living and greater inclusivity and participation by citizens. It is important to make certain that Egypt can move along the road to development and to the full achievement of its democratic aspirations. And that's something the United States will remain committed to.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials. Nigeria decides 2015. The final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.